When I started into this area and writing in this area, I immersed myself in spiritual literature. I read the Bhagavad Gita, the book that Gandhi based his life upon. It translates to the Song of the Lord. It's a book that you can read in one afternoon, 18 short chapters. But you can study it for a lifetime. You can read one little short paragraph from it each day and just try to practice it and see what it means. And I studied that almost every day, and even working guides to the Gita. And I immersed myself in A Course in Miracles, which is a whole collection of writings that a lot of people aren't sure about what the origins are, and there's discussions about who did it, and is it really the work of Jesus Christ, and is it channeled work, and so on. But whatever it is, and whatever its origins, what I know is if the world were living by the principles that are in there, we could really solve virtually all of the problems that we face as a people. And it's really a whole text on how to create miracles and how to live at a loving, higher place in our lives. And I also immersed myself in Madame Blavatsky's work. And she wrote a book back in the 19th century called The Secret Doctrine. And in The Secret Doctrine, she made some predictions. And Madame Blavatsky was one of the people, she was the founder of the Theosophist movement and was very, very influential. Had met Gandhi herself when he was a very young man, influenced people like William Butler Yeats and Jack London and many of the novelists and so on. A woman from Russia who traveled all over the world and lived in India for a long time. And she wrote this fabulous collection of metaphysical works about what is possible for humanity. And one of the things that she predicted is that in the last quarter of the millennium, the last 25 years of the millennium, and into the year 2011, there would be ushered in an enormous spiritual revolution. And this revolution would transcend anything we had ever known before about revolutions, like the agricultural revolution and the industrial revolution, when the whole shift took place away from agriculture and towards industry. And then the technological and and even the information revolution that we've seen in the last few years. And she said when the spiritual revolution is ushered in, it will transcend all of the previous revolutions. And it will begin in the last 25 years of the millennium, which was the year I wrote Your Erroneous Zones. And she also said that the people who will be the leaders of this revolution will not be the people in power. And, you know, if you look at the changes that have taken place on the planet in the last 20 years or so, since the beginning of the last 25 years of the millennium, those changes are really astronomical. I mean, we've almost become blasé about them. But, I mean, the fall of Berlin Wall and the dismantling of apartheid and the dismantling of communism and the dictatorships that have been overthrown and even the fact that you can't smoke on airplanes anymore. I mean, these are monumental changes and shifts that have taken place. And really the result of not so much people in power saying, let's not do this anymore. This isn't a nice way to treat people. But because of what Victor Hugo said in Les Miserables, there's nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And when Madame Blavatsky talked about who the leaders of the spiritual revolution would be, she said that these leaders will be ordinary people, regular, everyday folks, school teachers, musicians, artists, cab drivers, regular folks. And these people will speak out with a voice, and this voice will be heard, and then the bureaucracies will fall in line and begin to reflect what it is that this consciousness is instituting in our people. And if you look at the people who have been instrumental in changing consciousness in the last 25 years, you look at people whose programs you listen to through Nightingale Conan and ask what are their backgrounds. You find out that they're salesmen. Marianne Williamson was a singer, a nightclub singer. Louise Hay was a dancer. Dennis Waitley was a salesman. Zig Ziglar was a preacher. People who just did everyday, regular things. I was a school teacher. And somehow, there's a power, there's a pressure, there's something that has come and put us in a position of just talking about this kind of shift, this kind of consciousness. And what has happened for me, the little school teacher, is that when I finally immersed myself in the most spiritual text that I have really studied was the New Testament. I listened to the New Testament when I was a little boy. And I lived in a series of foster homes when I was a child. And so wherever I would go, they would just sort of put me in whatever church group that particular home practiced. So I'd be a Baptist one year, and the next year I'd be a Methodist, the next year I'd be a Catholic, and I'd be a Jew the next year, whatever. You know, you think that this is some terrible thing, that you're not going to get any roots. But really what it did for me was it exposed me to all kinds of different ways and different approaches to these truths. And then I sort of let that go because there was an element of imposing it and fear that I found myself being exposed to. You know, to fear God was what you were supposed to do, sort of. And so I let that go in my life for a long period of time. And then before I began to write about these books that sort of moved me away from psychological matters into spiritual matters, I really immersed myself in the New Testament. I read it from beginning to end, particularly the parts in red. Remember the parts in red? You know? That, you know, this is what other people were saying about what Jesus Christ was saying, and then this is what Jesus was saying, and it's like, this is in red, so, you know, you remember that. And you'll hear me talking about this in this program a great deal, a lot of the things in red. Not because I am trying to proselytize for any particular religious point of view, or I'm trying to recruit anybody, or, you know, I don't see myself in that role at all. It's not the purpose of what I'm talking about. But more to give us an understanding of what divine spiritual messages can mean for us in our life and how some of this has been misinterpreted as we have moved towards becoming more spiritual people. And so you'll hear me referring to this quite a bit. And then one of the things that I read was this idea that that Jesus Christ said to the masses, that something to the effect that even the least among you can do all that I have done, and even greater things, that you have this power within you. And reading that and interpreting that literally means being able to produce miracles, doesn't it? And being able to make things happen that we really sort of think are reserved for other people. And so what has happened with most of us is that we have come to believe that there are spiritual beings that we have sort of deified, and then there's us, and that we are separate from that. And in our separation, we have sort of given the power of being able to do these divine kinds of things, like manifest. The gift of fish and loaves is the gift of being able to feed the hungry from one's consciousness. The thought is enough to bring food into a place where there is a need for, where there is starvation, where there is hunger. And you think about, well, do I have the power within me? Is this what I'm being told? That I have the power within me to think food and then just wave a magic wand and there is food. Do I have that power? Well, according to, if you read that literature thoroughly and interpret it literally, yes, you do. But most of us find it very difficult to even begin to accept this idea that I can have a thought about something, and with that thought, I can then shift it to having it materialize or manifest or show up in the physical world.